Howdy, partners, and welcome to another episode of the Howdy Partners podcast, where we bring you tactical insights so that you can produce revenue in your role. Today's guest is one that has a hot take, and we won't get to it quite yet. If you saw the title, then it's going to be an exciting one. But Tom, how have you been since we last chatted?
I've been good. We had another kind of like, what's it called? Like catch 22 type situation. I was in Tampa. I think you're still in Tampa, but we didn't make it work, which is okay. So once again, we have not met each other face to face onto another adventure, but I've been good. just kind of kicking into the new year. I'm excited for today's episode. I love hot takes.
Heck yeah. I guess it has been about 4 years since we've known each other, but never met. So
it has. We're keeping the audience on this like kind of mystery, unsolved mystery. Like Will and I have been in several places together or the same city together, but not together. And so the journey goes on. The book
That's
saga
so funny.
Will continue. Yeah, isn't it?
Well, for what it's worth, I've never met Ben, our old co-host, either. So one day we'll make it happen. But on to today's guest. So today we're going to be talking about not only some major success in a partnerships program, but the very first question that we'll dive into, why not using partners to solve your top business problems, is literally comical. Pedro Matos from selfpublishing.com. How's it going? Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for the invite, man. Excited to chat more with you guys.
Yeah, and we talked last year and your story was so compelling that I tried to get you on the podcast before, but things just didn't work out in terms of scheduling. But I'm really excited to dive into the story today. So tell the audience a bit more about the company that you work for and what you do there, and then we'll dive into the success that you've seen.
Yeah, so selfpublishing.com, I've been in the company for 6 years now. We are a company that helps people write and publish books. So we've helped a little over 10,000 people through our courses, our coaching, and our services share their story and get the word out there through writing and publishing a book. And then what I do over the last couple of years is I started and have grown our partner program. So I look for communities, influencers, conferences, places where our ideal customer hang out, and I try to find win-win partnerships that allow people to bring those customers into us.
Amazing. And so I'm curious about what inspired this hot take about why not using partners to solve your top business problems is literally comical. Tell me more about that and the thought process behind it.
And so I was at a conference called Traffic and Conversions, giving a talk around, you know, partnerships and how we've scaled. And throughout the conference, I had a lot of different meetings, a lot of people kind of coming up to me and, you know, asking questions about how they could grow their own partner program. And one of the people that I was talking to is actually the CEO of this awesome company called Prime Corporate Services. It's a multi nine-figure business. Primarily, you know, the revenue of that business is driven through partners. That company in and of itself, the problem that they solve for their customers is they help them set up their taxes and their LLCs. And they partner with all of these different types of other businesses that solve problems for business owners, but don't solve it in that specific way. And this guy has just gone all in on nurturing these relationships and, you know, inserting himself into the customer journey for, you know, thousands of businesses at this point. And we were just talking and I was like, dude, like all of your partners, a lot of them I talk to as well. And they're our partners instead of customers to us, but I don't see them doing anything for their business within partnerships other than sending us customers. Like, why do you think that is? And he was just telling me, he's like, man, some people look at their business in a very linear fashion, right? Whereas in they have the product that they obsess over and they just try to sell that product to as many people as possible. The way that me and this guy, Steve, you know, just look at business overall is we obsess over solving a problem for a specific customer and we solve that problem in a very specific way. But that customer has hundreds of other problems that we should do what's in our best interest and connect that customer with all of the other people that can solve those other problems to them. I mean, the way that I look at it as well is, you know, I run a little bit of a real estate investing thing. So, you You know, I take kind of the money that I make with my job and I buy rental properties. I have a few properties in Chicago. And this winter, it was a tough winter, like very cold in Chicago, pipes freezing, you know, a lot of work that had to be done in the properties. And throughout my time, you know, being a landlord, I've built up a little bit of a Rolodex of different people that were doing different things, right? I've got my plumber, I've got my carpenter, I've got, you know, the people shoveling snow, I've got, you know, all these different contractors, right? And I feel like it would be very silly for me to reach out to the plumber and say, hey, plumber, can you also wire, you know, my house? Even though he could potentially try to figure out how to do it, what would probably be in his best interest and in my best interest would be if he said, hey, man, I would love to do that. I would love to take your money, but you should talk to Jeff, the electrician over here. He sends me an introduction to Jeff. Now, my goodwill with my plumber goes up. The likelihood that I'll do business with Jeff goes up. And I have two problems that are solved thanks to a business owner that, you know, isn't trying to solve all problems and all things for his customer.
Amazing. And so, yeah, taking that extended look outside of what you solve as a business to serve the client. And I think that's the main thing here, where you give them a better experience, you earn more of their trust. And like you said, you use the word goodwill. You now have more goodwill because you are better served. I love that approach. And that's, you know, Tom and I were in the software industry. And so, you know, technically in different worlds, but that sentiment is still the same, where if you are trying to serve the client and solve a problem for them, it only makes sense to bring in other experts or other technologies and other solutions to the problems that they definitely have, instead of either trying to boil the ocean and do it all yourself, or, you know, just not doing it yourself, but at least connecting with others. And so, I agree with the sentiment that it is comical to not include partners. And So I'm curious, like, what have you come across from, you know, any founders that you've talked to on the barriers in their mind? Like, why do you think that a lot of business owners believe this to not be too great for their business? And like, what's the disconnect for them, do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's two things that have come up, you know, kind of over and over again as I continue to have these conversations. And number one is that they think it's going to be a distraction to their main business, right? They think that, you know, if they start having a conversation with a potential customer and that customer for some reason maybe doesn't want to do business with them, then it's a waste of time for them to try to figure out another solution for that customer, right? It would almost be like if the plumber was like, okay, you don't want plumbing? Cool. Like, there's nothing I can do for you. I'm moving on. Right. And so they don't take the time to actually network and build, you know, the Rolodex to be able to solve the client's problems through introductions. I think that's one of the things that has really helped me is, you know, if I'm talking to a potential partner, the number one question I ask is, you know, what is the main goal for your business this year? Or what's the main challenge that you're facing in your company? And if it's something around books, I'm happy to help them solve that. But say they want, you know, to grow their sales team, or they want to, you know, run Facebook ads. I have done the work to have those people in my Rolodex, and I can introduce that person to them. Therefore, that problem is solved. I get goodwill built on my end. It doesn't take anything away from me, and it helps that customer. So I would say that's number one. And I think the second thing that's even a level, you know, below that is a little bit of a scarcity mindset, right? And sometimes, you know, say hypothetically you're running a partner program for a software company, right? And you're trying to attract, you know, say you're trying to sell Just Call, right? The phone system. Some people, maybe they have a thought in their mind that, like, if someone buys a different software, then maybe they won't have the budget to then buy what I'm selling. And so even if it's not competitive, I feel like people have a scarcity mindset around sending customers to a different business for some reason or another. I've encountered that, you know, many, many times. And then also to go another step further, they're not willing to open up their own Rolodex, their own customer base for complementary products and services. Maybe because they feel like if that person buys someone else's solution, they're not going to end up buying their own. So those are some of the things that I've seen.
Yeah. A couple things. One, it is super comical when you think about how just like the idea around like plumbing or home services and you know, these leaders that might be rigid to partnerships, take a step back and look at it in your personal life, right? Like you probably have a car mechanic that you like because you trust them. And like, there's, it's just this interweaving. You're trying to build a stronger net. And all you can do is continue to overlap the strings to say, how can I tie these strings together? And I think one of the ideas that came to my mind as you were kind of going through this or speaking about business leaders that enter into this scarcity or like the scare tactic of like, you know, like I want to stay laser focused on X, which is probably going to be revenue. The problem with that is like your circle of influence and tying that into, you know, everyone in SaaS is talking about like, how can I get our sales team to be like multifaceted or solutions oriented versus just selling our product? And this is all just tying back together. And one of the things that I think about, you know, when it comes down to like, if I'm working with a channel program, so I work with agencies all the time, and Pedro, you and I were catching up before, like I used to work at a HubSpot agency. Mm-hmm. And your idea around, you know what, I'm really worried that if I position another technology that will help help supplement or help enhance our technologies together, that they're not going to have the budget. It's like the idea that agencies that sell technology then are going to be too scared to sell their services to help implement that technology because they just had them purchase this. Like, oh, I had you purchase this to then purchase more stuff. And you're like, what do you do? It's just not the case. And people need to get out of their own way. Yeah. But I really like the idea of, you know, asking companies or like, as you approach partnerships, it's asking the question, you know, like what are understanding their goals, but like then just quite bluntly asking, like, do you have, like when you approach work, like, are you trying to solve for your customer? Because if the answer is yes, then ultimately you should be opening up your Rolodex and you should be helping to consult around like, hey, yeah, you just purchased our technologies, but can I give you some recommendations on other pieces of tech or other complementing, whether it's technology or home services, whatever it may in the publishing space, like artwork, cover stuff like that. I can imagine that you can start to build a stronger foundation. And ultimately what you're doing is you're building a better trust bridge for your customers to then say, listen, like it's going to be really hard for me to leave this partnership because of how much value Pedro has brought me by then just being you're being solutions oriented. I love it.
Yeah. And I would say that if there is such a lack of confidence in their ability to retain that revenue that they originally had, that they're so worried that it's going to go elsewhere if someone else gets introduced, then it's like, just build a better product. Maybe a product is simply not as good. Even when I've been thinking about, you know, potentially starting like a business or anything like that, I always think, okay, well, here's the problem I want to solve, but there are these other problems that I could then connect in, and then it just solves the problem even further, but I only have to do a smaller piece and I can still benefit financially from, you know, these other plugins. And so it's a very constrictive view of the world. So we've talked about, you know, why that might be and obviously the importance. Let's dive into your story. So you have generated multiple millions of dollars for selfpublishing.com through partnerships. Tell us about some of the major accomplishments as to how you achieved that. And then I know there's one specific example that we can dive into. But yeah, tell me about how you also scaled this to such a degree, because it sounds like your team is not, you know, a massive team. And so tell us more about the programs that you've implemented with partners to generate revenue and how you believe you were successful in the role so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started, and I'll just, you know, take a step back. I started in selfpublishing.com when I was 19. I actually started following Isaac Morehouse's content when he was still the CEO of Praxis, and he was talking about how college is a scam. And I was like, honestly, fair enough. I had just ran my first painting business in college. I was getting a lot more experience doing that than I was in the classroom. And so I decided to drop out. I actually ended up going through an interview process at HubSpot, where I learned what the word SDR meant. And in that process, I got connected to Chandler, the founder of selfpublishing.com, who had just launched the company. I really enjoyed the vision. Throughout actually the hiring process of going through HubSpot, I read this book called Predictable Revenue, which is about how Salesforce grew, you know, their sales team. And literally by reading that book, I created my job pitch to create the SDR role at selfpublishing.com based on what I learned in the interview process through HubSpot. So I had no idea what I was doing, but I acted like I did, and I got myself in the company then. Throughout that time, my first year, which was 2018, I ended up actually having two jobs. So my, you know, 9 to 5, my 40-hour-a-week job was being an SDR. So cold calling, you know, making 60, 100 calls a day, trying to set appointments for a sales team, you know, cold leads, warm leads, whatever I could get a hold of, right? My goal is to set about 3 appointments a day. On the side, Chandler had just gone through this program to learn how to become a public speaker and use speaking on stages to, you know, grow selfpublishing.com's brand. And he needed, you know, small startup, you know, who was going to do this? Me, the excited 19-year-old, was like, I'll do it. I'll figure this out. So on nights and weekends, I started sending cold emails to conference organizers to try to get them booked on different stages. End of 2018 happens. We, you know, on the last day of 2018, we had reached a really cool milestone, which is we did $1 million in revenue in 2018 from him speaking on stages and basically getting people to book calls with their sales team as a call to action. At the same time, I had done from the sales side, from the SDR side, about $600,000 in revenue. And so working 40 hours a week, you know, making $100 a day, I did $600,000 in revenue, working about 5 to 7 hours a week, sending cold emails, not really even necessarily having to sell. I was paying a lot of these organizers. We were doing sponsorships. It was a much more, I enjoyed the process a lot more. We did almost double as much with 20% of the work. That's when I was like, okay, like there's something here. I didn't understand the word leverage yet, but it kind of started to get my wheels turning. Fast forward a little bit, I was still doing, you know, the SDR role. We were growing the team. The stages thing actually took a little bit of a step back, but I knew that what I really enjoyed and what I really wanted to go into and the thing that was going to give me the most leverage was, you know, stages, which then turned into partnerships. And so then I go to this conference at the end of 2019. I see, you know, the founder of this affiliate marketing agency speak. Her name is Amber Spears. And then everything clicks. I was like, okay, stages, affiliate marketing, all that these terms mean is go find the places in which your customer is hanging out and find win-win leveraged ways to drive, you know, customers into your ecosystem. I was like, cool, done. I'm going to do that. I'm going to find myself a replacement on the sales side. Then I'm going to go all in on, you know, on this partnership side. So going into 2021, that was a plan. We hired, you know, other salespeople to fill in my seat. March happens. I'm good to go. I'm rocking and rolling. We're going to make millions of dollars off of this thing. My strategy at the time was strictly live events. I thought we were going to book, you know, 3 to 4 live events a month. I was going to train other speakers on our team. We're going to do, you know, a few million dollars of revenue that year, just, you know, going to conferences and speaking at events. Then this little thing called COVID happened. And I remember like yesterday, you know, March 2020, getting on calls. In one day, I got on calls with different conference organizers. 5 different conferences that I had scheduled and had us speaking on were just canceled. And by the end of that week, I had booked already about 12 different conferences, probably a couple $1 million in projected revenue, all gone, all to zero. And then I was like, what in the world am I going to do? How am I going to figure this out? So then I went back and, you know, I had been studying this affiliate marketing thing, kind of like the online version of what I was doing with these conferences. And I simply just started, you know, reaching out to the same conference organizers and some people that had email newsletters and email lists and started pitching them to do webinars. You know, we would either pay for the webinars or we would do webinars on a revenue share basis. You know, let us teach your audience how to write and publish their books. We'll have them book a call with your sales team. If they enroll, we'll give you, you know, a percentage of that sale. And we got a couple booked, did some revenue, and I was like, okay, this is my new strategy. And then in 2020, we grew simply by doing one live webinar per week. We grew that program from zero to $1.3 million in revenue in 2020. That went to about $2 million in 2021, $3 million in 2022. And then last year, we did $5 million, basically through speaking on stages and doing online webinars.
So connecting the dots back to the affiliate marketing side, I'm curious how you leverage, right? Like it sounds like easy on paper, just based on having a pivot in COVID, you know, okay, now let's do more of like the async. Let's try and book some stuff through webinars and that type of events.
Yeah.
But how do you then connect more of like the affiliate side to like really start to like ramp that up?
Yeah. So specifically in 2020, and now about, you know, 70% of our partners have a affiliate type of relationship, meaning, you know, most of the time they have a large email list. Like my ideal partner has, you know, an email list of anywhere from 20,000 to some of them have 200,000 people in their email list. They're interested in speaking and coaching and storytelling and, you know, creator economy, all of those things. And so my pitch to them is like, hey, you know, a lot of times the owner of that community has written a book themselves and, you know, the book maybe changed their life and helped me create a brand. Like I pitched them, I was like, hey, I know that you published a book and sounds like it probably helped your brand. You know, what would it look like for you to introduce your audience to that same opportunity, right? Or more importantly, do you think that there is someone or a group of people in your audience that want to write and publish a book someday? And most of the time, the answer is yes. Also happens that most people at some point have thought about writing books, but that's kind of, you know, once they say yes to that question, then the partner really has one of two options, right? They can either acknowledge the fact that their customer base has a problem that I can solve, and they can choose to either solve that problem themselves, or they can choose to simply ignore that problem and have someone else solve it for their customer, right? The partners that I work with, they say, no, like my job is to solve problems for my customer. I don't want to build a 70-person organization that can service them on writing their books. Here you go. You go ahead and do it and appreciate the commission check at the end of the month. So,
yeah, it's cool to see how you're kind of like blending and leveraging business problems, right? So like going through COVID, you understood there's now a massive problem. Your projection just went from you know, pretty good to now nothing.
Right.
So having to pivot, but then tying that back to partnerships. And I think like, if you think about just some of the ideas we talked about earlier, there's a lot to say about focusing and asking business leaders around the true problems that they have, whether it's projections, not hitting revenue, like whatever it may be. Like most of the time it's all going to stem back to how is their team trying to surpass and use their product to leverage success within customers. And most of the time what they answer right there is that you can use partnerships to your advantage, regardless of the industry. Like you have that Rolodex, open it up and like start to really build that in like that mutual success path with tech partners, with agency partners that can help you implement that technology or help like resell. Like there's so many different paths we can talk about, but half of it is getting past the mindset block of saying, no, why would I can't invest in partnerships. It's a distraction. It's not my main business problem. Well, it doesn't matter. Like partnerships will help solve your main business problems.
Totally. 100%.
So we're coming close to the end. We typically aimed for about 25 minutes, but this story is amazing. And I think everyone should be taking notes. And we always leave our audience with one tactical takeaway that they can implement. So even if they weren't taking notes, this is the one thing that we should leave in their minds. What would you say is the daily or weekly practice that folks who are building partnerships should consider to do? And it could be something that you've done either throughout your entire journey in partnerships, something that you started recently. What is that one tactical takeaway that you want people to start implementing either tomorrow or the day after they start listening to this?
Man, so... And I think I really used this tactic last year. So let me give you guys a little bit of a discrepancy between how when I started versus now, So in 2020, when I was just first getting started, the way that I would reach out to partners is just cold email, right? I'd research their company. I would try to find their email somewhere on the internet. And I would just fire off, you know, 20, 30, you know, 40 emails a day. And that helped build, you know, the initial network, helped get the first deals in through. Last year, I did very little, if any, cold outreach. And what I did instead is I did introductions. I took the time that I would use to send cold emails to people that didn't know me and try to get lucky if they opened my email and were at the right state of mind to take my call. I instead just used my time to connect people within my network. And sometimes they did some, sometimes it was someone that needed a service from someone else. Sometimes it was two of my partners that could collaborate with each other. I took so much time to do that, that the inbound that started coming into me for customers, for partners, for other random opportunities, speaking opportunities, right? Just went through the roof. Like I was like, I almost felt like I wasn't even doing my job anymore. Because I thought that my job was to just, you know, do cold email all day. When I was like, man, like this is fun. Like I'm losing nothing. I'm doing none of the quote unquote work because these two people are solving this problem. And I'm just getting an influx of people that want to help me. Like this is, I don't know why more people are not doing it. Salespeople, customer success people, other partner people. Like it was the biggest cheat code of all time. And I can't tell you guys like how valuable that allocation of time has been.
Amazing. Giving introductions and facilitating introductions to hit your number and basically get inbound partnerships and opportunities. I love it. That is so partner-minded of you.
Build your circle of influence.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. Pedro, thank you so much. We will end it there because that is one of the best tips ever that people can have. So people start making intros and, of course, asking for intros where it makes sense. And that is another episode of the Howdy Partners podcast. Thanks, everyone.